25 Interventions to Prevent Childhood Obesity. She'll be talking about what they did and how they did it. Please help me welcome Karen.
There are a lot of people out here. Good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here in lovely San Diego. Today I'll be talking to you about a project that I've been working on extensively in this past year and about the methodology that we've employed in this project, evaluability assessments. Evaluability assessments are something that was used in the 1970s and it kind of dropped off in the 80s and 90s, but it's regained popularity recently as a cost-effective way to pre-evaluate a program, policy, initiative. And as I'll be talking about, it can also be a very useful tool for program improvement and program development. I have no relationships to disclose. Before I really begin, I'd just like to acknowledge our team. As you can see here, there are quite a number of people involved in this project. This is really a collaborative effort among the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and even within CDC, we had cross-divisional effort with Division of Nutrition, Physical Activity, and Obesity, Division of Adolescent and School Health, Division of Adult and Community Health and Prevention Research Centers. Other partners included the CDC Foundation and Macro International, which is where I work. Macro served as the coordinating center for this. And Robert Wood Johnson Foundation was the funder, and in this unique situation, they also have played a very integral part of the project, contributing to the thinking, conceptualization, and decision making. And also, I just want to acknowledge, even though they're not listed here, I want to acknowledge the time and commitment of a network of researchers who helped us conduct many of these evaluability assessments. We were under a tight timeline, charge of conducting 25 of these over the span of 3 months. So we really relied heavily on their efforts. A little bit of background. As we all know, the prevalence of childhood obesity is astonishing. In the past few decades, the prevalence has more than doubled for children of all ages from 2 to 18. So given this, it's appropriate that communities are addressing the issue. However, like my colleagues have mentioned, the evidence base for environmental interventions is currently very limited. So communities and schools are implementing a good number of programs and policies, but they don't really have any idea about what is actually effective. So we have a broad brushstroke picture regarding trends and interventions, but we don't really know what are the most promising practices. And this early assessment project is a bigger effort to learn more about what communities are doing and to produce this information about promising practices. To do this, we wanted to first convene a panel of experts to identify and review promising interventions. We wanted to assess the programs and policies readiness for evaluation. We wanted to develop a network of public health and evaluation professionals with the skills to conduct these evaluability assessments. And lastly, we wanted to synthesize these findings and share the promising practices with the field. And I want to emphasize here that evaluability assessments is just one component of our early assessment project, and that's, you know, assessing the program and policies readiness for evaluation, which is the second bullet here on the slide. So we reached out to numerous public health professionals, advocates, national organizations, and state program officers at the CDC to solicit nominations of promising practices. We received close to 300 nominations, and we convened an expert panel to review a subset of these nominations. And this picture here depicts the funneling process we went through. Programs were deemed promising based on a set of criteria, such as potential impact, reach, feasibility of implementation, sustainability, and so forth. And our expert panel determined that 26 programs were worthy of further exploration, so we proceeded to assess these 26 programs' readiness for evaluation by asking them to participate in an evaluability three-day site visit. So the evaluability assessment helps to answer the inner layers here, the questions of, does the intervention have program design integrity and realistic achievable goals? Is the intervention implemented as intended and at an appropriate developmental level? Is there feasible evaluation design? And are data available or is it feasible to collect data? We were interested in environmental interventions in three focus areas: childcare and after school and daycare settings, increased access to healthier foods in underserved areas, and local wellness policies in school districts. We selected 10 after-school daycare programs, all of which focused on physical activity, providing nutritious snacks or nutrition education, and one policy even limited TV or video screen time in the daycare. We selected 10 programs that increased access to healthier foods in underserved areas, including farmers markets that were accepting EBT, electronic benefit transfer, or food stamps so that low-income families could purchase fruits and vegetables at their local farmers markets. We also examined supermarkets and corner store programs that changed their inventory to they had 1% milk available and fresh fruits and vegetables available. And we examined restaurant programs that alter their menus. We selected 6 school districts that had local wellness policies addressing physical activity and nutrition. And local wellness policies, for those of you who aren't so familiar with them, they are a federally mandated but unfunded policy where schools have to set goals for nutrition education, basically health promotion. And I think this was a law that was passed in 2004, and all schools are supposed to have this policy in place. So I've been talking a lot about evaluability assessments, but what really are they? An evaluability assessment is a systematic process that helps identify whether program evaluation is justified, feasible, and likely to provide useful information. So in this process, we like to look at 2 core issues, first of which is the adequacy of program design and logic model, which I think is really the crux of the EA process. When we examine a program, we like to create a logic model of the program, showing the links between inputs, outputs, activities, program outcomes, and program goals. So for example, in a restaurant program, if we recruit restaurants, we have them highlight the healthier options, we advertise these healthier options, we assume that people will buy them, people will eat healthier, and this will contribute to rates of obesity decreasing. Well, does that all really make sense? Is it logical that this would happen? Is there anything that needs to be done in between those steps? So a good logic model clearly lays out the program goals and objectives and their relationships to the program activities. The second issue is consistency or fidelity of the program's actual or real implementation to the design. Is what's written on paper actually happening? So what we did and what we're currently doing. I should mention here that what I've been talking about was actually the first year of our project, and we're currently in our second year, so we've been replicating this process. These are things that we've done and we're actually currently still doing. So we've convened an expert panel, a 15-member expert panel, and that includes experts in obesity, nutrition, physical activity, and evaluation. We conducted 25 evaluability assessments, and as you recall, 26 were selected, but one had to decline because of staffing changes in year one. And in year two, I think we are in the process of conducting 23 of these evaluability assessments. And we also trained 32 site visitors in this methodology. And as you recall, one of the project's purposes was to train, you know, a network of professionals in this. But in addition to this, like I was saying, they also served a practical purpose for really helping us get this done in a timely manner. And we are currently disseminating our findings with presentations, reports to various potential funders about the promising practices that are out there. And we're also synthesizing this information we've learned collectively from the 3 thematic areas and providing this back to the program so they can learn about the common themes coming out of this. So we really want to disseminate information about both our methodology and also about the findings. So how we did it. Prior to each evaluability assessment, site visitors reviewed background documents and developed a preliminary logic model. During the 2 to 3 day site visit, they conducted between 9 to 12 interviews with program staff. And people included lead administrator, program manager, partners, and evaluator if there was one present. And interviews focused on the program's historical overview, background, staffing, funding, sustainability, barriers, evaluation activities. And on the last day of the evaluability assessment, site visitors conducted a technical assistance debriefing session with the lead administrator and other program stakeholders to talk through this logic model. And this logic model was usually revised as site visitors learned more about the program, and they used this logic model as a basis of discussion about potential evaluation activities and just, you know, are the links clear? So shortly after the valuability assessment, site visitors provided programs with a summary report of findings and recommendations, and also followed up with a TA phone call with CDC content expert to talk through these recommendations, which were both programmatic and evaluation-focused. So the process of going through these EAs helped programs realize some epiphanies, some of which I've listed here. First, programs are not proposing to do enough of an activity to achieve the desired results. Again, where are the gaps? What can be done? Second, connections between activities and desired results need to be improved. So this is about the program's theory, and it's also related to the point above. What can programs do so that these links are more clear? And this next one is actually very common. Implementation is inconsistent or different from what was proposed. So as we found, often what's written on paper is different from what's actually being implemented. And we all have to be flexible, but has the program drifted too much from its original intention? Have program activities changed too much to produce the intended outcomes? And lastly, programs have realized we need to do this for a while before we can reasonably expect to see the desired results. So programs really need to mature. So we've actually winnowed down the list from the 280 to 300 nominations we received to the 25 evaluability assessments. The expert panel and the project team determined that 14 of these programs were ready for a full standalone outcomes evaluation. Two were best suited for a cluster evaluation, meaning that these were similar programs that were not as strong individually, but potentially could provide useful information when they were examined as a group. Three programs were theoretically sound, but need further development. It seemed like they just needed more time for program implementation. And six programs needed technical assistance in specific areas, really delineating those links in program theory. So our process reviewed more than a dozen diamonds in the rough programs worthy of more rigorous evaluation. And we have actually selected one for a comprehensive multi-year evaluation, the New York City daycare regulations. Which 200 or 2,000 licensed daycare centers in the city are mandated to provide at least 60 minutes of physical activity for children age one and up. It limits TV, video, screen time. It restricts drinks with added sweeteners. It limits juice intake. So some of my colleagues actually met with the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene last week to talk through some of these potential evaluation questions and an evaluation design. So it's actually a really exciting time for us. So in conclusion, gathering experts and professionals and nominations from the field has helped us identify promising programs in a systematic manner, and we can really begin to learn about what is effective for preventing childhood obesity. The benefit of learning from multiple experiences is greater than looking at just one individual program's experience. And we're really moving the field because we recognize the strengths of multiple programs in a particular thematic area. And programs participation has allowed us to synthesize all the good things they're doing so that we're really building practice-based evidence. And lastly, evaluability assessments were beneficial for the programs themselves because they helped the programs clarify their goals and their role in obesity prevention, and also help them realize the program epiphanies that I had just listed, and this assists them in program improvement and program development.
Thank you very much, Karen. We're going to go ahead and take this opportunity to ask questions of any of the presenters. At the very end, there we have Sandra, we have Christine next, we have Patricia, Dana, and Karen. Go ahead and shoot your questions out right there.
There is.
Come on up.
Please repeat the question.
Sure.
The question was, is there a mechanism for distributing the best practices? We're actually creating something called synthesis reports of the three thematic areas, and we're hoping to distribute that to both the fields, all the people who participate in this. And I believe it's also going to be up on CDC's website, in their Division of Nutrition, Physical Activity, and Obesity's website.
Yes, sir, at the back.
No, I think Robert Wood Johnson Foundation is actually interested in disseminating this information so that all programs out there, we were targeting, in this project, we were targeting community-level programs, but we want to give them the skill set, we want to build their capacity for evaluation. So I think this was a really critical piece in that, in just doing the pre-evaluation work, looking at, you know, what are some potential data sources, what are your evaluation questions, actually looking at the program theory, you know, does this make sense?
Yes?
I have a question also.
For Karen.
In this regard, the cycles collected in New York City daycare, so are those daycares required by law to social legislative?
Yes, in the city of New York. So there are about 2,000 licensed daycare centers.
So it's a requirement of licensure?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Absolutely. The question was about sustainability in the community health centers in Boston working with the schools. And a number of the community health centers that we do work have partnerships with their schools. I think for the sake of this presentation, we were so limited with time, where it would be nice to really delve into an example of one of the health centers. A particular health center that's located in Dorchester works with two of the nearby schools where they're able to physically use their space. And I think that's one area where the schools and the health centers have been able to form a great partnership, with the schools having gyms and just the physical space and the proximity that families are familiar with, and it's safe and nearby. So the health centers have begun to work with the schools. But I think moving forward, there's definitely an opportunity to link more in with the school nurses.
Good question for you were looking at evaluability, so absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yes and no. I think the CDC now realizes that there is not very much out there about evidence-based programs, effective programs. So I think this isn't the only direction they're going in. They're interested in this methodology and in looking at programs up front to create the evidence base. And they're still our funding was really from Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, but we involved both the CDC and CDC Foundation. And I think there's just a lot of interest in, you know, looking at things collectively and making sure that, I mean, we're not even sure that New York City daycare regulation will be effective, but it's, you know, planning the evaluation, making sure that we're measuring the right things, doing a good process evaluation as well. I don't know if that answered your question, but it's a little of both.
Yes, they'll be available through the Essential Learning. The question was, would these presentations be available after the conference? Yes, sir, at the back and then in front of you. Yes, sir.
Okay, I'll have a question for you. How are the foundations continuing to support and sustain the programs that are placed in the Houston area? I know that it's still difficult to engage some foundations.
Question is, how are foundations sustaining the programs in the Houston area? Well, that's a good question. I think there's it's a two-part answer. One is that everybody that we work with within the Obesity Collaborative, the STEPS Collaborative, it involves the foundations in the collaborative so that they are aware of the results that are coming out of this, of the evaluation from the program, from the CATCH program, for example. So they want to continue to fund it. We have, you know, a very large philanthropic community that has been favorably inclined to fund it. That's one thing. The other thing is that we're seeing, as you mentioned, the capacity building requirement, that foundations need to be helping our nonprofits learn how to do better evaluation. And to do that, we need to help fund those kinds of things. So we're funding, and a lot of foundations that we work with are funding capacity building grants. So if any of you here are with nonprofits, talk to your foundation officers about getting some additional funding on top of the programmatic or operational funding to help do that. Does that answer your question? Good.
Yes.
I think it's the reality of implementation. So what a program is proposing to do when they're seeking funding looks really great on paper, but when they actually go out. So for example, in a restaurant program that we examined, they wanted to encourage these restaurants to change the menu, actually provide healthier options. But because this was located in a low-income area, and these were a lot of these were family-owned restaurants, it wasn't feasible. So what they actually did was highlight the items that were already there that were healthy, like whole wheat bread, like 1% low-fat milk.
Dealing with, and it ends up costing more staff time and resources than what you thought because you run into these various challenges you weren't aware of. And then to add on a strong evaluation piece, the evaluation always costs more than the intervention if you want it to be strong and effective. But yet, the funding sources usually aren't strong enough to support that. So how do you, I guess I'm looking for, where do you
I think it's really going back to a logic model or the program design and realizing that your expectations might not be met. If your program has changed, is it still going, I mean, are the linkages still there? Is it still going to affect these outcomes? And are you still addressing this goal? Does that...
That's a simple way. It's not like that in reality.
I know. That's a good question, and I'll be happy to talk with you further, and I can actually direct you to our project director as well, who has a little bit more experience, and I think she'll be able to talk you through some of this.
In the front right here, you had a quick question.
I was just going to make a quick comment. We're real pleased being here. We're one of the sites that actually had become a visit, so it kind of exciting, but I think that does. We were one of those sites, and it was indeed a wonderful opportunity. One of the things, though, that I responded to is what you have printed up here, and I believe it gets somewhat to what others are maybe mentioning. I'm not a real fan of the logic model, but I've continuously shared that and asked, you know, will you please educate me? And perhaps I'm terribly ignorant and not seeing the wisdom of it. But one of the things that was brought out was, as we were doing our programming, which was designed to help kids understand and achieve some fundamental skills that American Academy of Pediatrics Expert Committee, AMA, CDC, these are things kids need to do to prevent childhood obesity. That's what we are trying to achieve. Knowledgeable of the fact that there are so many intervening variables that are going to impact whether or not they're able to execute those skills, but we were forced to put in the logic model that healthy eating behaviors and decreasing BMI is what we're trying to achieve. And so some could say, well, guess what? You're missing key activities to make that happen, to which I say, no kidding. But we've got to start somewhere. And I think it's the reality that you work with in the community setting. That's perhaps, maybe I've misunderstood, but I think that's some of the frustration that those of us who are out in the community contend with mm-hmm. when we have to squeeze everything into these models to try and make them work.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
This is for Christine. Christine, we have a similar program on a much smaller scale that you presented in Boston. And one of the issues that we have is with recruitment. And, you know, a lot of people sign up, a lot of people want, a lot of kids and their parents want to be involved in some of these obesity intervention programs outside of our community health center that we organize and run. But then, folks who show up are really very small. And I was wondering if you had that problem and how much the case manager really made an impact on that.
I think with all after-school activities, whether it's in the community health centers or an after-school program, a number of the programs often find themselves competing with one another for kids in the program. What we've really tried to do is to have all the primary care providers aware of the program so that we increase the number of children that are actually being referred to the program. And just making the connection with the providers and doing that in the first year so that all of the health center providers were knowledgeable of the program to make the referrals was an essential first step. But then also having the case manager to make the connection with the families and to physically have somebody on site at the health centers who can call the family and to say, I referred you, to the YMCA. Have you been going? How's it been? Have you been having success? Are you comfortable there? And having that person who's able to develop a unique relationship with the families has really been a success. I think without that set person who has the allotted staff time to make those phone calls, the program wouldn't be as successful.
So they're all individualized plans. They're not being directed into one large intervention or various interventions?
Each health center's case manager really works with the family to refer the overweight child to an intervention that's most suitable for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. The health centers are all part of an organization that's called, it's the Boston Collaborative for Food and Fitness, where the City of Boston recently received a grant from the Kellogg Foundation. And the built environment is one particular area that the collaborative is working on. The health centers often do struggle with, just safety in the community and access, transportation to and from the particular areas. One program that we have that's located out at UMass Boston, it's a great facility. Unfortunately, getting to and from that location has been a real barrier for our patients.
So that's one of the issues that moving forward that we definitely have to look at. You know, even with T accessibility in the city of Boston, transportation continues to be an issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a question for you, Christine, while you're up here. One of the programs that I worked on did offer scholarships and did offer these specified interventions. And I work with community partners, with school nurses, and with faith communities, and nonprofits and businesses as well, to get the community together to intervene with obesity. And we did take that approach of offering scholarships. And I do this through a hospital community benefit program. One of the challenges that we had to work through was getting people committed to actually take advantage of those scholarships. Because as many of you may know, when something is completely free, it seems less valuable to people. Mm-hmm. So can you talk to us a little bit about how you dealt with that or if you faced that?
And it's an issue that we're still trying to address. You know, cost always comes up as an issue and a barrier and a reason for why a number of the families in our community are unable to access these resources. So for us, when we were developing the program, we immediately thought that having access to free physical activity was the solution. For a number of the families, it is. And for a number of the families, they wouldn't be able to access these resources if the scholarship wasn't for free. But we do, with the YMCA in particular, the way that we track the referrals is we count the number of families that have actually been referred and compare it to the families that actually register. And what we found is about 50 to 60% of the families that are referred register for the gym. So, you know, we are really just still trying to figure out, well, we know that it's convenient because we allowed you to select a location that you and your family can access. It's free. You know, the services are culturally appropriate, so really just trying to figure out why that 40 or 50% of the families that are referred don't register.
Right. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yes.
So a number of the health plans do have relationships with the community health centers and are able to, you know, both provide care and to provide resources to low-income families in Massachusetts. Neighborhood Health Plan is one particular provider that recently developed an educational brochure. And that brochure is something that all of the health center providers, you know, distribute to their patients. It's a unique flyer, not a flyer, but a little brochure. It's called Thumbs Up, Thumbs Down, that has photographs of healthy and non-healthy foods. And it's very culturally appropriate because it's just a thumb up if it's a good food or a thumb down if it's, you know, a non-healthy food. But that's one area where the health plans have come into working and, you know, providing educational material for the health center community.
Thank you. Well, hopefully as we get closer to 2010, we get a little closer with all of these programs to meeting our Healthy People 2010 goals. We have a long way to go, obviously, but looking at all these research components, these programmatic components, obviously we're taking strides in that direction. I'd like to thank the APHA as well as the Community Health Session of APHA for sponsoring this session. My name is Ijama Wachuku, and I'd like to thank all the wonderful presenters, Sandra and Christine. I'd like to thank Patricia, Dana, and Karen. Thank you very much for attending. Thank you.